welcome to the reading of the Cedar Rapids Gazette for today, Labor Day, which is September the 6th. I'm your reader, Ken Lauder. First, let's take a look at the weather for eastern Iowa. Today, we're expecting a mostly sunny day. Winds will be from the north at 5 to 10 miles per hour, and Cedar Rapids will climb to a high of 82. We'll see 83 in Iowa City. And then falling to the low tonight of 63 in Cedar Rapids and 64 in Iowa City. Sunset tonight is at 7:32 p.m. Sunrise tomorrow at 6:38 a.m. for a total daylight period of 12 hours and 55 minutes. And now from the front page of today's Gazette, COVID-19 on the rise in Iowa schools. No mask mandates, minimal contact tracing in districts, a story by Grace King of the Gazette staff. Kennedy High School sophomore Cordy Alpers said she is one of a handful of students in her classes who wears a mask. 2 weeks into the school year, she's noticing a lot of empty desks of students who either are quarantining from exposure to COVID-19 or who tested positive. Iowa school districts are prohibited from requiring masks to be worn in buildings because of a law signed by Governor Kim Reynolds in May. Schools also are not required to conduct contact tracing, and many parents are frustrated. They don't know if their child is considered a close contact with someone who tested positive. A close contact is someone who is within 6 feet of a COVID-19 positive person for 15 minutes or longer. Cordy, age 15, received an email alerting her of positive COVID-19 cases in her school the first week of school. Governor Reynolds, this decision she's made banning mask mandates is just asking for trouble. She's really messing this up for everyone and is part of the reason why we're still in this, Cordy said. Last week, Cedar Rapids schools shifted their contact tracing protocol after seeing a rise in cases of COVID-19 in the community and in schools. The district will begin conducting contact tracing, and students or staff members with COVID-19 symptoms or a positive test now are required to isolate for 10 days. As of Friday, Cedar Rapids schools were reporting 66 students and 14 staff who tested positive for COVID-19 across 24 of the district's 32 schools. Cordy made her own decision to get vaccinated for COVID-19 last spring and said it's outrageous. There are people eligible to get vaccinated who still haven't. People who don't get vaccinated are part of the problem, too. We wouldn't have the Delta variant or have to wear masks if they just got vaccinated, Cordy said. Cordy took classes virtually last year until January 19, when Kennedy High School reopened after repairs to damage during the August 2020 derecho that swept through Cedar Rapids were completed. She continued her freshman year in hybrid learning, going to school 2 days a week and learning from home the other days. Last year, the hallways were sparse. Students were able to keep their distance from each other to mitigate the spread of COVID-19, with some students in hybrid learning and others learning online only. This year, there's not an inch of space between students in the hallways when they transition between classes, Cordy said. But Dan Alpers, Cordy's father, said it wasn't a difficult decision to send Cordy back to school in person this year. She needs the social interaction for the sake of her mental health, he said. There were days last year that Cordy's mental health was suffering so much she couldn't shower or even get out of bed, she said. Part of it was the fear of living through a pandemic. The other part was the social isolation and sitting in front of a computer for classes the majority of the day. I wanted to go back to school, see my friends, and not act like robots, Cordy said. To manage some of her anxiety and depression during the pandemic, Cordy has thrown herself into her hobby as a haunter at Circle of Ash Haunted Attraction in Central City. Alpers, a designer for Circle of Ash, and Cordy work year-round on preparing the haunt for the October Halloween season. Cordy is working on making her costume for next month, which she called The Creature in the Woods. Scaring people can be a form of therapy, Cordy said. As students begin their third week back at school, more cases of COVID-19 are being reported daily than were recorded in an entire week in July. The 7-day positivity rate for COVID-19 is almost 15% in Linn County, said Dr. Pramod Dwivedi, Linn County Public Health Director, in a news conference last week. The Delta variant of COVID-19, which is highly transmissible, is the only strain being detected in Linn County. In August, 13 people died of COVID-19, the highest number of deaths seen in months in Linn County. Last week, 45 Linn County residents were hospitalized for COVID-19. This past Monday, the U.S. Department of Education's Office for Civil Rights opened an investigation into Iowa and four other states to explore if banning mask mandates discriminates against students with disabilities who are at a heightened risk for severe illness from COVID-19 by preventing them from safely accessing in-person education. Katie Ripke's 3-year-old daughter tested positive for COVID-19 on August 29. A Linn County contact tracer told her two sons, 8 and 6 years old, also would test positive. No one is escaping this, Ripke said. Her sons attend Lisbon Elementary School. Her daughter is an in-home daycare, and when she started developing a cough, Ripke took her out of daycare and had her tested to keep the other children as safe as possible. Her family is choosing to isolate for 10 days while her daughter is sick and will quarantine for another week after she has recovered and monitor the rest of the family for symptoms. Iowa law does not require students to quarantine if they have not tested positive for COVID-19 and are not showing symptoms. Ripke said she's sick to her stomach, sending her kids back to school this year when there's no mask mandate. I was anxious about it last year, but they all wore masks. This year, my kids are 2 of a handful wearing a mask in the whole school, she said. It's very frustrating for me that the decision about masks cannot be made at a local level. Ripke also is struggling to teach her children at home while they are in isolation. She and her husband are balancing 2 full-time jobs with 3 kids at home. Last year, there were more options for children learning from home, whether by choice or because they were in quarantine from exposure to COVID-19. Many districts offered temporary remote learning, and students could log on to a virtual lesson posted online by their teacher, or even watch instruction live streamed from the classroom. Now, no school is required to offer or maintain continuous remote learning or deliver instruction over the internet under a new state law. Marley Hurt, age 15, and her brother Sullivan Hurt, age 8, were in quarantine for the first week of school after their father Derek, who is vaccinated, tested positive for COVID-19. They are students in the Linn Mar Community School District. Their mother, Laura, said it was difficult to get homework sent home for her children and is disappointed there's no temporary virtual learning option for them. Everyone I talked to was amazing and supportive and apologetic, Laura said. They all shared the same concerns, but their hands feel tied. Marley was vaccinated last spring when the Food and Drug Administration authorized emergency use of the COVID-19 vaccine for children 12 and older. As a type 1 diabetic, she is considered at high risk for COVID-19, and her family quarantined much of last year. She and Sullivan attended school virtually during the 2020-2021 school year. Laura has mixed feelings about sending them back in person for the 2021-2022 school year. Marley and Sullivan wear a mask in school to protect themselves and other students. We do it because it's the right thing to do, Laura said. The fact that other people are so selfish and Kate can't take that small step to protect other people is ridiculous. John Wiedenheff's 4-year-old daughter Nora was in quarantine last week after being exposed to COVID-19 at St. Matthew's Preschool. Nora's pediatrician recommended that she quarantine until September 2, even though it is not required. She tested negative for COVID-19 on Wednesday. Nora attended daycare and preschool at St. Matthew's since June 2020. This is the first time the family has been notified of a positive COVID-19 case in her class. Wiedenheff attributes her exposure to fewer people wearing masks. Last year, when all the kids had masks, there was no one sick in her classroom, Wiedenheff said. It's just tough. It's tougher for parents who do want their kids to wear masks. It takes away some of that social reinforcement the kids were getting before to wear a mask. I think kids are really good at wearing masks when they see everyone else doing it, and the teachers are reinforcing it. Nora is one of 4 in a class of 20 that's wearing a mask. Then, if she takes it off, there's no reinforcement to put it back on. Also from today's front page of the Gazette, a dry summer drives more harmful lake algae blooms. Swim warnings because of toxins at state parks double. This is a story by Aaron Jordan of the Gazette staff. A hot, dry summer, particularly in northern Iowa, has created favorable conditions for more harmful algae blooms in Iowa lakes. The Iowa Department of Natural Resources reported 24 swim advisories at state park beaches this summer because of microcystins, toxins generated by harmful algae. These toxins, if ingested, can cause gastroenteritis, allergic responses, and potentially fatal liver damage. This is double the 12 microcystin advisories in 2020. It goes back to the drought, said Mary Skopek, director of the Iowa Lakeside Laboratory on West Lake Okoboji. When it's stagnant and still and hot and dry, that is perfect growing conditions. Most of the northern half of Iowa is in moderate to severe drought, according to the most recent U.S. Drought Monitor map released Thursday. In June, 90% of the state was at or near drought conditions. Climate change has also increased the likelihood of severe storms, which can bring heavy rains that wash manure and fertilizer off farm fields and into streams and lakes. Overall, the Iowa DNR reported 106 swim advisories at 39 state park beaches after conducting weekly tests from Memorial Day weekend through Labor Day. This is down from 118 advisories in the summer of 2020. The bulk, 88 of this year's warnings, were for E. coli, bacteria that indicate the presence of feces in the water. A handful of beaches had weeks with advisories from both E. coli and microcystin. 3 eastern Iowa beaches had the highest number of advisories of all of Iowa's state park beaches. Lake Darling State Park near Brighton had 12 of 15 weeks this summer when water at the beach did not meet state standards for recreation. For all of July and the first week of August, the beach had advisories for both E. coli and microcystin. Backbone State Park Beach near Dundee had 11 advisories for E. coli starting in early July and lasting for the rest of the summer. Lower Pine Lake Beach near Eldora had 9 weeks with swim warnings, including 4 weeks when levels of both E. coli and microcystins were too high. 22 Iowa State Park beaches had at least 1 week with a swim warning this summer. 16 had no advisories. The Iowa DNR did not do water testing at Lake Aquabi near Indianola because of renovations there. The Iowa Environmental Council, based in Des Moines, would like to see more genetic testing for E. coli contamination to understand whether the bacteria are coming from geese, humans, or livestock, said Ingrid Gronstahl, water program director for the group. The council is working with the Iowa DNR to improve warning signs, including by having signs also in Spanish, posting cautionary signs when there is a visible algae bloom, but before weekly sample results are back, and posting signs at boat ramps. Skopak, who supervised Iowa DNR water monitoring for years, thinks this is a good idea. I knew back when I was working at the DNR that we needed to improve our signs, she said. They were kind of wordy and don't necessarily grab people's attention. Skopak would like to see the Iowa DNR recognize water recreation doesn't stop at Labor Day, and maybe post signs advising people to watch for algae blooms and don't let pets drink lake water. The Environmental Council has regularly posted and reported on swim advisories this summer to make Iowans more aware of how polluted water affects their recreational options. As the pandemic has shown, opportunities for the public to get outside and experience nature are vitally important to quality of life, and we must protect these resources so that they are safe for people and pets to enjoy. Also from today's front page, BAE Systems to make military GPS units in Cedar Rapids. Receivers will be about the size of a postage stamp. This is a story by John Stepp of the Gazette staff. One of Cedar Rapids' newest major employers has big expectations for a product about the size of a postage stamp. BAE Systems, which acquired Collins Aerospace's military global positioning system business in 2020, plans to produce about 20,000 microgram M military GPS receivers per year in Cedar Rapids. The Microgram M will be BAE Systems' smallest, most energy-efficient, and lightest GPS receiver, the company said. If you think about the GPS chip in your phone, in your car, in your iPad, or in one of those little drones you buy at Best Buy, it's that little GPS engine that provides position and timing to the system, said Greg Wild, BAE Systems Director of Navigation and Sensor Systems. The Microgram M does that with special characteristics. Unlike the GPS in a smartphone, BAE Systems product includes anti-jamming and anti-spoofing technology that prevents enemies from disrupting GPS signals. Before unveiling the postage stamp-sized product, BAE Systems' smallest military-grade GPS receiver was about the size of a credit card, Wild said. Most military equipment that uses BAE Systems' GPS units are battery-powered, he noted, making the increased energy efficiency of the Microgram M especially important. The improved efficiency means that your batteries will last longer, which reduces the amount of charging, Wild said. If you're replacing batteries, it's less batteries the soldier has to carry with them, which is a huge advantage. He said production will begin at a few thousand annually before eventually reaching 20,000 as customers upgrade from older technology to BAE Systems M-code equipment. BAE Systems broke ground in 2020 on a $139 million classified defense aerospace facility in southwest Cedar Rapids, which is expected to be complete by September 2020. BAE Systems has been working in Collins Aerospace facilities in the meantime. Turning to today's opinion page, we have a guest column by Zach Walls. Zach Walls lives in Coralville and is the Democratic leader in the Iowa Senate, and his piece is entitled, Workers Are Pillars of Life in America. Since the New Deal, the Democratic Party has been defined by our dual commitment to civil rights and workers' rights, the twin pillars of democratic politics in America. This Labor Day, workers across America will commemorate and celebrate the struggles, sacrifice, and advancement of the labor movement, whose victories benefit every American. This Labor Day is a reminder to the Iowa Democratic Party about the importance of returning to our roots of prairie populism. While much of the focus on Labor Day rests on the rights secured by the labor movement, another way of looking at this progress is through the lens of responsibility. Over time, the labor movement has changed how our country considers the responsibilities of employers and governments. Our nation's 18-month battle with COVID-19 has underscored the importance of strong workplace protections for every Iowan and continues to remind us that we all truly are in this together. Americans from all walks of life have learned and been reminded of the powerful lesson from the Reverend Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. that we are all caught in an inescapable network of mutuality, tied in a single garment of destiny. Whatever affects one directly affects all indirectly. King's words foreshadowed a lesson from Senator Tom Harkin and his late colleague, Senator Paul Wellstone, that we all do better when we all do better. These are labor values and these are Iowa values. The Republican Party has recently started claiming that they are the party of working people. But let's look at the facts. When Republicans took power in Iowa, they wasted no time passing an agenda meant to hollow out the middle class. Governor Kim Reynolds and legislative Republicans passed laws to gut collective bargaining rights, slash wages for union and non-union workers alike, and even to increase property taxes on middle-class families. That's not a party of working people. That's not a party that treats Iowans fairly or rewards hard work. The difference between the Democratic Party and the Republican Party is simple. The Democratic Party believes in fairness for every Iowan. We believe in improving the quality of life for all people, not just those at the top. We believe that we all do better when we all have great public schools, have affordable health care, and are members of strong and caring communities. The Republican mentality works for those at the top, but not for the people whose blood, sweat, and tears built this country and whose sacrifices ensured the rights and freedoms we will all be celebrating on Labor Day. The Democratic Party is at a unique moment in our party's history. The lessons of COVID-19 are universal and speak to fundamental democratic truths. No man is an island. We are all in this together, and we all do better when we all do better. These are guiding principles of the labor movement that built the American middle class. These are the roots of the Iowa Democratic Party's progressive prairie populism, and they are the most promising path for our future. And that piece by Zach Walls of Coralville, who's the Democratic leader in the Iowa Senate. And we have two community letters today, the first coming from John Fletcher of Cedar Rapids. His letter is entitled, Biden Must Be Impeached for Treason. Treason is the only crime mentioned in the U.S. Constitution in Article 3, Section 3, Clause 1. Since taking office in January, President Joe Biden has committed treason on several occasions and unequivocally must be impeached. Among the illegal activities by Biden are giving aid and comfort to our Muslim terrorist enemies. Specifically, Biden has left the terrorists with billions of dollars worth of military equipment, including planes, helicopters, guns, rockets, and night vision goggles. While all are a serious dereliction of duty, the latter two will put our soldiers in serious harm's way because they fight guerrilla-style battles. I call on all readers of this publication to do the right thing. Contact your senators and representatives and demand they start impeachment proceedings. Our children, grandchildren, and great children deserve much better. This by John Fletcher of Cedar Rapids. The next letter comes from Stephen and Joanne Harfray of Cedar Rapids, entitled "Police Do a Tough Job to Keep Us Safe." Would you apply for this job? You will work for a city whose mayor and most aldermen don't support you. You will work without a contract for 4 years or more. Your days off will be canceled with no notice. You will be subject to verbal abuse and have stuff thrown at you. Your actions will be second-guessed by millions who don't know the circumstances of what actually happened. The legal system will let criminals you have arrested go free before your shift ends. The stress you experience will be at times unbearable. You will risk your life every time you go on patrol. Our son-in-law is a sergeant with the Chicago Police Department. He cares about the district he patrols, the men and women under his command, and the city he has lived in his entire life. We are proud of him, but have concerns. Many people, including us, live our lives far from areas that experience high crime. We say nothing when the headlines shout, "Defund the police." We are safe and comfortable because law enforcement is doing their job. Our son-in-law told me he wanted to be a fireman. When the fire department shows up, everyone is happy, but that isn't the way it is when the police arrive on the scene, he said. We support law enforcement reforms, but not defunding. We are thankful that there are men and women who chose to go into law enforcement at all levels to protect us. And you're listening to the reading of the Cedar Rapids Gazette for today, Monday, November 6th, Labor Day, on IRIS, the Iowa Radio Reading Information Service for the Blind. Now let's turn to today's obituaries. From Cedar Rapids, Larry, also known as Red Alderman, age 78, died on Saturday, September 4, at his home. A memorial service will be held on Wednesday, September 8, at 6 p.m. at the Peter Syme Funeral Home in Kelowna. The service will be available via live stream at the Beatty Peter Syme Facebook page. The family will greet friends at the funeral home from 4 to 6 p.m. on Wednesday. Also from Cedar Rapids, Judith, also known as Judy Eileen Clowers Neely, stepped into the arms of her Savior on Thursday, September 2. In celebration of Judy's life, the family will greet friends from 5 to 7 p.m. on Thursday, September 9, at the Murdoch Funeral Home in Marion. A funeral service will be held at 11 a.m. on Friday at the Northbrook Baptist Church at 1700 Boyson Road Northeast in Cedar Rapids, where an additional visitation will be held for 1 hour prior to the service. From Cedar Rapids, Dennis D. Thompson passed away on Wednesday, September 1, at the Dennis we have no further information on Dennis Thompson's funeral arrangements at this time. From Cedar Rapids, Randall Joseph Bielner, age 72, passed away unexpectedly on Wednesday, September 1, the day that would have been his 49th wedding anniversary, at his home. In agreement with his wishes, cremation has taken place. A funeral mass will be held at 10:30 a.m. on Tuesday, September 14, at St. Pius X Catholic Church at 4949 Council Street Northeast in Cedar Rapids, where family will greet friends for 1 hour prior to the Mass. From Marion, John F. Roskopp, age 58, passed away on Friday, September 3, Services are at 6:30 p.m. at Spirit of Faith Family Church in Cedar Rapids on Thursday, September 9. A visitation will be held on Wednesday, September 8 at the Cedar Memorial Park Funeral Home from 4 to 7 p.m. And from Toledo, Dale William Henley, age 93, passed away on Thursday, September the 2nd, at Premier Estates of Toledo, under the care of the Iowa River Hospice. A Mass of Christian Burial will be held on Wednesday, September 8, at 10:30 a.m. at St. Patrick Catholic Church in Tama. Interment will follow at St. Patrick's Cemetery in Tama. A visitation will be held on Wednesday, September 8, from 9:30 a.m. until the time of Mass at the church. Also from Cedar Rapids, Denise Marie Olhauser Holmes, age 61, passed away suddenly on Thursday, August 26, at Unity Point Health St. Luke's Hospital, with loved ones by her side. From Marengo, Deborah, also known as Debbie L. Grimm, age 72, passed away after a long and difficult illness on Friday, September 3, at Unity Point Health St. Luke's Hospital in Cedar Rapids. A celebration of life is at 5 p.m. Saturday, September 11, at the Kloster Funeral Home in Marengo. Interment will be at Bishop Cemetery in rural Marengo at a later date. A family will receive friends from 2 to 5 p.m. Saturday, September 11, at the Kloster Funeral Home in Marengo. From Marion, Catherine, also known as Kate J. Bradley, passed away on Thursday, September 2, at Unity Point St. Luke's Hospital in Cedar Rapids. In agreement with her wishes, cremation has taken place. Family will greet friends and family from 4 to 8 p.m. on Wednesday, September 8, at the Murdoch Funeral Home and Cremation Service in Marion. From Cedar Rapids, Mary Pauline Kluse, age 88, of Cedar Rapids, passed away peacefully, surrounded by family at St. Luke's Hospice on September 4. A funeral mass is on Wednesday, September 8, at St. Pius X. Visitation is from 9:30 to 10:30 a.m. prior to services at St. Pius. A luncheon will be immediately following the services, with burial at Mount Calvary Cemetery to take place after the luncheon. And from Fairfax, Bonnie Jo Petrick, age 70, passed away on Saturday, September 4, in her home. A celebration of life services will be at 10:30 a.m. Thursday, September 9, at the Brosh Chapel and the Ava Center in Cedar Rapids at 2121 Bowling Street Southwest, with burial to follow in Fairfax Cemetery. Visitation will be from 4 to 7 p.m. Wednesday, September 8. The Brosh Chapel and the Ava Center in Cedar Rapids are in charge of arrangements. From Loudoun, Dolores A. Griffith, age 76, passed away on Saturday, September 4, at Mechanicsville Specialty Care. Funeral services will be held at Chapman's in Clarence on Saturday, September 11, at 10 a.m. And then from Monticello, Jenny M. Dirks, age 93, passed away on Thursday, September 2, at Monticello Nursing and Rehabilitation Center. Visitation will be held from 10 to 11 a.m. Tuesday, September 7, at the Kramer Funeral Home in Monticello, where a memorial service will commence at 11 a.m. Burial will be at Oakwood Cemetery in Monticello. From Swisher, Keith Lyle Millard, age 79, died Sunday, September 5, at the Solon Retirement Village. A celebration of life services will be noon Tuesday, September 7, at the Brosh Chapel and the Ava Center in Cedar Rapids, located at 2121 Bowling Street Southwest, with burial to follow in Anderson Cemetery. Visitation will be from 10 a.m. until service time Tuesday, September 7, at the Brosh Chapel in Cedar Rapids. from Urbana, Darren Lee Goodell, died on Monday, August 30. A private family burial will be held on Monday, September 20. A public celebration of life will be held at the Don Bosco Hall in St. Mary's Catholic Church at 402 Ash Avenue in Urbana on Saturday, September 25, from 2 to 5 p.m. And from Columbus, Georgia, Dustin, also known as Dusty Robert Johnson, passed away unexpectedly at his home on Wednesday, September the 1st. Family will greet friends and family from 12 to 2 p.m. on Wednesday, September 8, at the Murdoch Funeral Home and Cremation Service in Central City, Iowa. A funeral service will follow at 2 p.m. on Wednesday at the funeral home. In true Dustin fashion, please dress casually for the service. Burial will follow at Mount Clark Cemetery in Central City. From Lehigh Acres, Florida, Douglas E. Johnston, age 51, passed away unexpectedly due to complications of COVID-19 on August 28, with his family by his side at Lee Memorial Hospital. A celebration of life will be held from 2 p.m. on September 26 at the local 125 Plumbers and Pipe Fitters Apprentice Center at 5101 J Street Southwest in Cedar Rapids. And from Wilmar, Minnesota, Vernon Noki, age 90, died on Friday, September 3, at the Copperleaf Senior Living in Wilmar. Funeral services will be on Wednesday, September 8, at 11 a.m., with visitation for 1 hour prior at Peace United Church of Christ in Elkader. A burial with military rites will be at Eastside Cemetery in Elkader. Arrangements are with Dirks Blem Funeral Service of Olivia, Minnesota. From Cuba, Missouri, Linda K. Morton, age 73, formerly of St. James, Missouri and Cedar Rapids, died unexpectedly on Friday, August 13, at Sullivan Hospital. Memorial services will be handled by Josh Karen, Rolla Kingdom Hall of Jehovah's Witnesses, on September 12 at 2 p.m. by way of Zoom. And in other death notices from Anamosa, James, also known as Jimmy Fell, age 73, of Anamosa and formerly of Tipton, died Sunday, September 5. The Fry Funeral Home in Tipton is in charge of arrangements. From Cedar Rapids, Linda H. Lynch, age 74, died Friday, September 3. The Cedar Memorial Park Funeral Home in Cedar Rapids is in charge of arrangements. Also from Cedar Rapids, Arlene M. Richardson, age 83, died Saturday, September 4. The Murdoch Linwood Funeral Home and Cremation Service in Cedar Rapids is assisting the family. From Cedar Rapids, Ellen Tolliver, age 72, died Saturday, September 4. The Brosh Chapel and the Ava Center in Cedar Rapids is in charge of arrangements. From Earlville, Joseph H. Werner, age 77, died Sunday, September 5. The Clifton Murdoch Funeral Home and Cremation Service in Earlville is assisting the family. From Hiawatha, Charles Dawes Jr., age 90, died Wednesday, September the 1st. The Murdoch Funeral Home and Cremation Service in Marion is assisting the family. From Independence, Linda K. Hearn, age 76, died Thursday, September the 2nd. The White Funeral Home in Independence is assisting the family. From Springville, Eugene Wilson, age 62, died Friday, September 3rd. The Cedar Memorial Park Funeral Home in Cedar Rapids is assisting the family. From Tama, Ori Lasley Sr., age 79, died Friday, September 3. The Cruz Phillips Funeral Home in Tama, Toledo is assisting the family. And from Vinton, the Reverend Walter R. Grimes, age 89, died Friday, September 3. The Van Steenhuys Tehan Funeral Home in Vinton is assisting the family. And from Watkins, Bryce Brecht, age 59, died Saturday, September 4. The Phillips Funeral Home in Blairstown is assisting the family. And the lead story from today's sports page is about Iowa football, and it's entitled Examining Moss's Picks, Taking a Closer Look at the Senior Cornerback's Big Game Against Indiana, a story by Leah Van of the Gazette staff. In the postgame, Iowa senior cornerback Riley Moss broke down exactly how two of his pick sixes happened through his eyes. Both exemplified not only Moss's intuition, but also what he learned from Indiana's film study and how his teammates played a role. Here's how it all went down. On the first interception, Riley Moss said the defense was in cover two. This means that there are two safeties at the back, Jack Kerner, who was the free safety, and Kayvon Merriweather, the strong safety. Also in coverage are linebackers Seth Benson and Jack Campbell, plus Dane Belton in the cash position, which is a hybrid defensive back and linebacker. Matt Hankins is at left cornerback, and Moss is at right corner. Moss said that Indiana's wide receivers were running a smash concept, which is designed to beat zone coverage, because it forces Moss to make a decision to cover deep or stay in the flat, opening up the receiver behind or in front of him. Indiana junior Miles Marshall took the deep route, while graduate transfer DJ Matthews took the quick out. During this time, Indiana quarterback Michael Penix might be thinking that Moss will cover deep and Benson will cover underneath. But Benson is actually going to run with Marshall to prevent him from cutting inside, allowing the safety to stay in deep zone coverage so that Moss can go underneath to cover Ty Freivogel's route. Matthews slips, but still managed to get his hands on the ball. During this time, Moss backpedals into coverage and breaks toward Matthews as soon as he sees where the ball is going and catches the ball off Matthews' tip. His 30-yard return is not completed without a crucial block by defensive end Joe Evans at the 15-yard line, which comes from the far left side to take out running back Davion Irvin Poindexter. The second interception was simpler and emphasizes Moss's intuition. In Iowa's cover three, Moss is responsible for the deep third of the field on the right side, while Merriweather has the middle third. Kerner is in the box covering the receiver in the slot, while Belton is covering the flat and the linebacker has the underneath. Normally, Moss stays deep in this situation, and Belton would cover the throw in his zone. But Moss sees that Penix is throwing wide to the outside of the numbers, where Indiana graduate transfer Cameron Buckley is mid-route. Moss jumps ahead. "I didn't back up and then just played the ball," Moss said. "It comes from film study, and that's weird and hard to explain, is sometimes I just feel like something's going to happen." Moss earned the National Walter Camp FBS National Defensive Player of the Week for his performance. He's the sixth Hawkeye ever to earn the award, with the most recent being quarterback Nate Stanley, who won the offensive honor in 2018. Josh Jackson and Josie Jewell received the honor in 2017. He's the third player in school history to return two interceptions for a touchdown in a single game, and also added two pass breakups and a solo tackle against Indiana. Here's your Dear Abby for today. It's entitled, Boyfriend Proving to Be Not Much of a Father. Dear Abby, I have been with my boyfriend, Nick, for 10 years. We have been through a lot. We have a 3-year-old son, and Nick's mom passed away shortly after his birth. Nick now tells me he doesn't want to watch our son, that he wants his time for himself. All I need is for him to watch him one day a week while I'm at work. My family helps the other days. I have a good job, which Nick wants me to leave and move across the country with him. I feel it would be a mistake to move before our cars are paid off and our son is in school, which will all happen in a year. Nick says he doesn't want to wait, and he's threatening to go without me. He said he didn't sign up for kids in the first place. I don't want our relationship to end. I don't want to be a single mom. Help, please. Signed, So Unsure in California. And Abby responds, Dear So Unsure, it's time to face reality. You are a single mom. Nick has made plain that he doesn't want the responsibility of fatherhood. He will, however, have a legal responsibility to support his son financially. Do not allow yourself to be rushed into moving. Your reasons for wanting to wait make sense. You have steady employment and relatives who provide safe, reliable child care for your boy, who may reach adulthood before his father does. And from today's Iowa Today section, Variety of Entertainment is Up Its Alley, a story by Melody Parker from Waterloo. On August 27, leagues and recreational bowlers were already rolling on the lanes at the newly rebuilt Maple Lanes Bowling Center at 2608 University Avenue. Co-owners Rich and Kathy Eigme were busy finishing last-minute details in the Kingpin Social. They were preparing for the new bar and restaurant to open around Labor Day. More than a year ago, contractors began rebuilding the iconic 62-year-old bowling center that was nearly destroyed by an arsonist on February 4, 2020. Building back, I decided to think outside the box, Rich told the Waterloo Cedar Falls Courier. I've been in the bowling business about 35 years, and I've traveled and visited a lot of other bowling centers. What you see now, what has been created, is the culmination of ideas from all the bowling centers I've seen and wanted to have here. Maple Lanes has reopened as an entertainment center with more activities in addition to bowling. There are 28 glossy new lanes and masking units sporting a collection of black and white images with pops of color featuring recognizable and historic local entities, including Waterloo's Electric Park Bowling, Starlight Theater, and Riverfront Stadium. A new lighting system allows each lane to have its own color show, as well as opportunities for bona fide light shows and a new sound system for rock and bowl, Rich said. The new front desk is now in the center of the bowling alley next to Lane Side Bar and Grill. The pro shop has been moved from the west side to the opposite side of the building, and restrooms are in new locations. About 20 feet was added to the west side of the building for the new restaurant, bar, and mezzanine. Bowling and dinner, or simply a good meal, is on the menu at Kingpin Social. The restaurant and bar can be entered through the bowling center or a separate entrance. In designing the space, we had the thought that this could be a great place for a company to have a team building event, meet, eat, socialize, and maybe bowl, and go have some fun, and a place where people who aren't interested in bowling could come and enjoy the food, Kathy said. A quartz bar, poured concrete, epoxy flooring, and a variety of seating, including booths, create a welcoming space. On tap will be a selection of local and regional craft beers. Mixed drinks and other beverages will be available, as well as adult milkshakes concocted from vanilla bean ice cream, rum, or other liquor and flavorings. At the entrance to the restaurant stands a classic 1950s telescoring table in lieu of a hostess stand. We're jumping off a cliff here opening a restaurant. We've hired a chef, Kevin Klein, who is developing a menu that has bowling alley staples, but is also broader and more adventurous with upscale renditions of American classics, Rich said. Monte Cristo sandwiches, brat corn dogs, smoked brisket, mac and cheese bakes, and other dishes are planned. Klein also created Inferno, a collection of smoked meats, including baby back ribs, hush puppies, and other bites, served with a flame at tableside. On the bar's main menu are four duck pin lanes. Duck pin, similar to a standard 10-pin bowling and popular in the northeastern U.S., is enjoying a renaissance around the country. The novelty bowling game uses a 5-pound, 5-inch ball without finger holes and requires a different skill set than regular bowling, Rich said. It levels the field between experienced and inexperienced bowlers. Upstairs, there will be billiard tables, darts, pinball, and other games and activities. In colder months, Rich expects to start a few indoor bags leagues because the mezzanine ceiling is high enough that we can do that. Outdoor seasonal offerings will include two sand volleyball courts for league play, a beer garden, and a fire pit. Rich and Kathy are happy about realizing their dream of what a bowling center can offer in the Cedar Valley. It's bittersweet because of how it happened with the fire, but we're back with a new and improved bowling center, Rich said. And from today's community page, Honor in Every Classroom, a story by Grace King of the Gazette staff, Dateline Marion. Almost 400 U.S. flags are being donated by the Marion American Legion Post 298 to Linmar and Marion Independent Schools. The flags will help the districts stay in compliance with a new state law, House File 847, that requires every K-12 school to administer the Pledge of Allegiance on a daily basis and show the U.S. flag while the pledge is recited. The U.S. Supreme Court ruled in 1943, that forcing students to recite the pledge is a violation of the First Amendment, so students and parents could opt out. It's awesome that the Marion American Legion wanted to donate hundreds of flags to the school districts, Linmar Associate Superintendent Nathan Ware said. We have a community group that's willing to step in and help us support in education, and that's certainly appreciated, he said. The flags were a significant investment for the Marion American Legion, Ware said. Dean Abramsk, a Marion American Legion commander, estimates the flags cost almost $4,000. Children and youth are our future, he said. I wanted us to do more for the community. Before the new state law requiring the Pledge of Allegiance to be recited, Ware said it was mostly done only in elementary schools. Students in middle and high schools, where classes rotate through the day, haven't always been able to prioritize saying the pledge. Supporting our country is our priority for everything we do, Ware said. I wish we had more local control in decisions about how and when and what things happen in the walls of our schools. While both school districts already had flags in most of their elementary school classrooms, most were needed for middle and high schools. Until the districts were able to secure flags, they were projecting the image of the flag on a screen for students the first few weeks of school. Marion Independent Superintendent Janelle Brower said with the new law, the pledge will be said over the intercom so all students can participate at the same time. Facilities and maintenance staff in both districts are being tasked with putting the flags in each classroom. Gary Wegman, executive board member of the Marion American Legion Post, said the Post thought it was an important way to support their school districts. Two of the four pillars the American Legion was founded on are Americanism and children and youth. Last month, the Marion American Legion Post presented the flags to Marion Independent before a football game. As our schools daily participate in the Pledge of Allegiance, the flags donated by Marion Post 298 will play a valuable role in the practice. It was read at the game. Flags will be presented to the Linmar Community School District later this month. And from Iowa City, sign up for Wednesday cholesterol screenings. The Visiting Nurse Association will conduct a cholesterol screening at the Iowa City Johnson County Senior Center at 28 South Lynn Street in Iowa City from 8:30 to 10:30 a.m. Wednesday. Appointments are required. Call the VNA at 319-337-9686, extension 1155, for more information or to schedule an appointment. A general risk assessment, including blood pressure and cholesterol screening, will be available. A lipid profile with glucose, which includes total cholesterol, HDL, LDL, triglycerides, and glucose, will be offered for $17. To obtain the most accurate results, a 10 to 12 hour fast, no eating or drinking anything other than water, is recommended. In accordance with public health COVID-19 guidelines, all attendees are required to wear a face mask and will be screened before their appointments. And from Marion, a mayor encourages equity challenge participation. United Ways across Iowa have created a 21-day equity challenge to raise awareness about the ways racism, discrimination, and inequities affect the state. Marion Mayor Nick Abu-Assali has signed on and is encouraged the community leaders, city employees, and area residents to take the self-guided 21-day equity challenge. The online journey is designed to help participants develop a deeper understanding of important issues affecting Iowans and reflect upon their personal journey and identify actionable solutions that can create meaningful change over time. Diversity is a strength that should be valued and celebrated, Abu-Assali said. This program offers each of us the opportunity to learn and increase our awareness of the issues around equity and inclusion. This is important as we work together to build a truly welcoming and inclusive community where all people are valued and treated equally. The program runs September 1 through 30 and is free and open to anyone to participate. It provides daily emails with links to recommended articles, videos, podcasts, and more, and explores topics such as implicit bias, child care, mental health, housing disparities, and discrimination and generational wealth. Visit iowaequitychallenge.org and complete the form to sign up. It asks for an email address and a zip code. Join thousands of fellow Iowans to develop a deeper understanding of what holds people back in our state and identify small steps that can be taken to help create a more equitable Iowa for everyone. And that does it for today's reading of the Cedar Rapids Gazette for Monday, Labor Day, September 6th, on IRIS. I'm your reader, Ken Lauder. You can access a recording of today's reading on our website at iowaradioreading.org at any time. And thanks for listening.